The basis of trust is track record. And so, you know, having people with whom you have a track record is very, very valuable. And you don't create that, you know, in perfection. You create that in trial and error and sleepless nights and hard times. It also finally helps to have people who know you well enough that they will speak the truth to you, especially as a leader. The higher you move up in the leadership ranks, people will stop telling you the truth.
Welcome to Management Development Unlocked, where you will learn how to nurture a world-class management team. And now your host, Eric Girard.
Welcome back to Management Development Unlocked. I am so happy that you're here. Please remember to subscribe to the show. I am thrilled to announce that according to this morning's analytics, we have over 3,200 downloads and 1,400 listeners. So those are big numbers for a podcast that's just getting started. So I'm really happy. Today, I am privileged to have Wendy Pfeiffer with me. Wendy, welcome to the show. You have an amazing background and we have working at Nutanix in common. So please tell us, who are you and what do you do?
Eric, first of all, congratulations on your podcast. I'm so happy for your success. As you said, my name's Wendy Pfeiffer, and I have been an executive in various technology roles for the past 30 years. I've been a CIO, a CTO, CDO, VP of engineering, and I've always worked at the intersection of technology and business operations and really tried to help companies and people use technology for all of their purposes, their good purposes, and especially tried to help mid-level and senior executives to develop and to learn how to have some expertise and mastery over how they use technology to operate.
That is amazing. Just your background staggers me. Yeah. And I just remember when we were at Nutanix together, just in addition to all those things, how incredibly kind and patient you were, at least with me. So I really appreciated all of that.
Thank you. Well, I'll tell you, I love people and I love people who are putting their best out there. And what I recall about you is you always had this deep heart and caring for the experience of the customer and for the experience of the people who worked with you. And so I naturally responded to that like people do.
Well, it worked out well, and I'm super thrilled that we get to talk here. Now, there's something that you brought up. Did I hear you say CDO?
Yes.
What is a CDO? All the other alphabet soup I understood, but the CDO?
Chief Digital Officer is one of the meanings, or Chief Data Officer is another meaning. And for a while there, for about 5 minutes, it was a substitute for the term CIO. The term CIO sometimes was popular, sometimes is not popular, depending on where the world is. But recently, the pandemic kind of undid all that, and CIOs became popular again. And then, you know, we didn't have to use the term CDO to make ourselves cool.
Okay, got it. Yeah, so it's kind of a whim, a title of whim, maybe?
Maybe, although I've probably insulted all of the CDOs listening to you, but yeah.
Well, luckily, I don't think this show hits that high, so I think you're safe. I think you're okay.
Not yet, man. Not yet, but you never know.
Well, listen, if you're a CDO, please email me and we'll have a chat. I would appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right. So our topic today is advice from the worst manager we've ever had. And my first question is about your first management role. And specifically, I'd like to know, did you ace your first management role?
Eric, even just thinking about it makes me nervous, makes me feel terrible inside. I was a manager. I sort of backed into a management role for a French company many years ago. And one day I went from being an individual contributor. I helped them to start up the company in the US. And so I worked all by myself in this, you know, sort of big building for a couple of years doing business and business operations things. And then all of a sudden, all of these people showed up. And the next thing you knew, I was put in charge of a team of salespeople. Now, I am a nerd and I am an introvert on a core, you know, sort of level. And also at the time, the way that I showed my nervousness was that I was arrogant. And so I suddenly got this team of seasoned and new salespeople. It was about a dozen salespeople. They were in process. They were doing great. And they suddenly started reporting to me. And I didn't want anyone to know it was my first management job. And so I remember after my first month, we sat down at this pre-existing monthly meeting that they'd been having without me because they didn't bother to tell me. And the oldest salesperson in the group, and I knew she was old because we had celebrated her 60th birthday. And she was like, I'm the oldest and I've been doing this for all these years. She was anointed the spokesperson. And she looked me in the eyes and with great sort of anger and disgust and almost sort of a lip curl, she said, "We all got together and we want you to know that you are the worst manager that we have ever had in our lives. And in fact, in my long storied career," she said, "you are the worst manager I have ever had. And I've been at this for a long time." And I will tell you, it was devastating. It was horrible. So I went to my boss, the guy who believed in me and had put me in this job, and I tendered my resignation and I explained to him what had happened. And I said, you know, I thought I could do this, but this is not the job for me. And I don't even know why I'm bad. I can't even tell why they don't like me. I think I'm doing pretty well. And he said, yeah, I don't accept your resignation. You come back when you understand why they said that you were the worst ever, and I'll accept your resignation. But otherwise, you go back in there and you figure it out. And I will tell you, you know, if the story would sound better for me if I marched right back in there and I said, you know, let me take some notes. But I didn't. I went home and I had a donut and, you know, sort of self-medicated with carbs and sat there going like, I never want to do this again. I had a good cry. I was so embarrassed. And then finally I realized, you know, I really don't know what I did wrong. And I kind of do need to know. And I already sort of, I mean, they hate me anyway, and I'm kind of hating them. So I might as well ask them. I mean, who cares? And I sort of got angry and I went back and learned the lessons that I needed to learn.
And can you recall maybe the top three lessons?
Yeah. Lesson number one is that I did not respect the level of self-actualization that they already had. In fact, ensuring that I build a team of people who either are or who can become self-actualized is one of my key lessons that I still have today, meaning that, you know, people need to understand their purpose and they need to take responsibility for what they're doing in your team. And they need to have the enough autonomy within the structure that's set up to make their own decisions and to do things their own way. I was a very process-oriented person. And so without any learning at all, without any understanding of who was in my team, I had come in and I had thought, I'm gonna make this better. I'm gonna make the sales better. I've put together a, you know, 7-step plan for how sales can be good. And I'm gonna tell these people and they're just going to do what I say and everything will be perfect. You know, it was completely uninformed, insensitive. But mainly it was also structurally, although it was logical, it was logic from the wrong logic system. I hadn't bothered to learn anything or to listen to anything. And I hadn't bothered to ask them what they thought should be done to improve things. And it was mainly because I was terrified. I was nervous. And a lot of new managers I've learned, you know, they sort of create a false bravado and they want people to think that they know more than they know. And, you know, that shows. People can tell when you're faking it. People can tell when you're scared. People can tell when you don't know what you're doing. And they may not tell you to your face. I had the great good fortune of being told to my face. And so that was one key area. The second key area is I really didn't know anything Not only did I not know about managing people and managing things, but I didn't know anything about sales. And so I was suddenly a manager of selling. And at my core, I did not have respect for salespeople. I didn't like them. I sort of thought it was a throwaway job. And I didn't think it took expertise. I didn't think they were as smart as me. So I had this arrogance and this lack of respect for the people who worked for me. And so coming from that, what happens with in a situation like that is if you have respect for others, you know, respect engenders respect and disrespect engenders disrespect. And so I just completely didn't see the good qualities of the people who worked for me. And then finally, the third thing was that I expected that leadership was decreed, was you know, given, not earned. And so I thought that because the big boss said, she's your manager, that everyone agreed to that and they would follow me. And I can say down through the years what I've learned about being a leader and also reporting to folks who are leaders is that leadership is never decreed. Leadership is always earned. And sometimes that takes a long time. And so in the beginning, when you're first given a leadership position, people may do what you say, but it doesn't mean they're actually following your lead.
Oh, such good lessons. And a lot of that echoes with my first management role back in Silicon Valley back in the day, where I came in with a plan and a PowerPoint deck and I was going to fix this team, and it did not go well. So, and hence I have this job. So,
I have empathy for that. Did they actually look you in the eyes and say you were the worst manager they'd ever had in a 45-year career? Because that
No, that part does not resonate. My team was passive aggressive.
Oh,
and just worked around me, which was which was joyful. Yeah.
And this is why it was the great good fortune that they did tell me directly, because the way I'm wired, I may not have really understood the lesson otherwise. You know, I really had to be told directly to my face and then work it out. And I can tell you that they never really liked me and I never really liked them, but I learned a lot and I stayed in that job for a number of years and, you know, built on that. So, and you know, to this day, I've now at one point managed a team of almost 1,000 people and lots of smaller teams as well, and global teams and all different functions. And so I can honestly say that I'm a lot better at it now, but every single management lesson I learned, unfortunately, I had to learn like on the job vocational training, and I'm still learning those lessons as a board director now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I imagine that's a whole new level of where you're playing now.
It is, mm-hmm. And a lot of the old lessons apply, and there are a lot of new lessons as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can only imagine. Well, once a person becomes productive in their first management role, what do they need to do to advance to higher levels of management? So assuming that this person wants to be a professional manager and wants to ascend the ranks that way, what do they need to do to advance to higher levels?
I'm so glad you're asking me this because, you know, as I understand it, a lot of folks in your audience and your podcast audience are walking that path of management, are walking up that ladder of management success. And, you know, a lot of times we just plan for that next hurdle in front of us. And so, yay, you know, I crossed the chasm and now I've gone from being an individual contributor to a manager. And, you know, if you can work that out and you're starting to feel successful and you're starting to feel good and you can rely on your team, it feels very comfortable to stay there if it's going well for you. But there are some really good reasons to progress. And one of the biggest reasons to progress is your own heart for your team. It turns out that you can do more for your team, more for your company, more for the objectives that everyone in the group has with the more authority that you accumulate. with more authority, you have more budget, you have more span of control, you have more visibility into incoming things. And so I would say, first of all, a lot of people ask, you know, how do I know when I'm ready? And I think you know when you're ready to move up in the management ranks, when you start to have a hunger to have resources for your team members to achieve more. That really is the strongest driver and has always been the strongest driver for me. And so then you've got to ask yourself, all right, you know, what sort of environment am I in? And in most corporate environments, it's an environment of scarce resources. There are only so many resources to go around. Anyone who's ever been through a budgeting process knows that there's a fixed amount of money and it's sort of split up between all the groups. And so how do you get enough money to fund the positions, to fund the projects, to fund the activities that you need? Well, you know, part of that, of course, is you need to make the arguments for it. But part of it is it's at the end of the day, it's a little bit of a bartering and a trading system. If I get, you know, more budget than my neighbor, I didn't get that casually. I got that because I justified it. I created something that was valuable for the company, et cetera. And so at first, when you want to be a manager, it's all about, you know, sort of being in charge of projects and things. But as you move up through the ranks, it's about having enough authority and capacity and span of control to enable your people to have those same things. And that requires, first of all, a knowledge of your own value as a middle manager to the company. Secondly, it involves really understanding the people in your organization who are your peers, because these are the folks you're essentially either partnering with or arm wrestling with for the scarce resources, for the scarce people. And then ultimately, it also requires knowing what your company is focused on as well. And when I think about all of this, I think about some trainings that I've given my management team down through the years. And there are lots of different great methods. One of the methods that I love is, you know, Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And, you know, for those of you who don't know, the first 3 habits are personal habits. They're things you work on for yourself to be effective. And that's really what you're working on as a brand new manager. You're working on showing up with integrity and, you know, as a leader. The next 3 habits are interpersonal, interdependent habits. And it's those skills of interdependency that help you to move up in the ranks as a middle manager. One of the concepts is that all of us are working with an emotional bank account, and we either make deposits into our peers' emotional bank accounts, or we make withdrawals from those emotional bank accounts, and they do the same with us. And so essentially, when you're going to make a pitch to your company to get more resources, more of a span of control, you are making withdrawals from the emotional bank accounts of your peers. And you can't withdraw from nothing. You have to have made those deposits. You have to have some value to them. And you also have to have, you know, supported them, done some favors for them, highlighted their efforts, uplifted what they have done. And so you can do that unconsciously. You can automatically just be a nice person and be, you know, spreading love and joy wherever you go. Or like me, you can learn how to do that. And you can do that consciously in the same way that you might earn money and make deposits into various savings accounts and money market accounts and so on. Ultimately, what you're developing in non-emotional terms is you're developing a portfolio of assets throughout the company that you can draw upon in order to maximize your available resources for your team. And if you do that well, if you make those withdrawals from the emotional bank accounts that you've set up with your peers, and you invest well, and your team works, and that work then is reflected in value to your peers and to the company, well, then people want to invest more in you. And so you can be very conscious about this, even though we're talking about interpersonal relationships. You can be very formulaic about it, and you can actually address it as a portfolio. Or like I say to a lot of the folks that I mentor, it is possible to do well financially by doing good, by doing the right thing. And so always looking to help others, to highlight and amplify others, also accrues value to yourself and then ultimately your team. Your team with the right resources will deliver on those investments, thus buying you the ability to get more investment. And that virtuous cycle is sort of at the core of a management career trajectory towards success.
Wow. Wow. We should just end there.
Okay.
the whole idea of the virtuous cycle and investing in people, investing in that emotional bank account. This is very similar to what I write about in my book, where I talk about how necessary it is to show empathy, to have real empathy for the people who work for you and work around you. Mm-hmm. You know, that's going to be the difference between you or a bot managing your team in the next 3 years is your humanness. Yeah.
It really is. I will tell you that the very best managers I've worked for have brought forth from me the desire to do well for them. They're in that equation. I feel that, I want to make them look good. I want them to have the thing they want. I want their success. And likewise, I've had my own team members tell me that, say, to me, Wendy, whatever you ask me to do, I'll do. Wendy, I see why you're doing this. I believe in this plan, because the last time I was in on one of your plans, it was successful. And, Eric, that is another real key to middle management and above success is essentially creating your crew, creating your group of people whom you've invested in and who see that it's successful to be, connected with you. If you go out on LinkedIn and you look at all the C-suite executives, like you pick anybody that's a, CEO or a CFO or a CTO, and look at the people they're connected to, and you'll often find that their key connections have been with them, have actually worked with them at multiple companies. And what happens is when as they're moving up the ladder of success, they're bringing their team members with them and ensuring that their team members share in that success. And in an exchange, their team members are contributing to their success and therefore to the company's success and so on. And so there have been many times when I've been recruited for a C-suite position where the second question out of the interviewer's mouth was, and do you have a team that you can bring? It's so common. And so, we don't get this as your job and your role scales. You cannot do it by yourself. You have to be able to trust others. And the basis of trust isn't some weird, squishy, scary thing. The basis of trust is track record. And so, having people with whom you have a track record is very, very valuable. And you don't create that, in perfection. You create that in trial and error and sleepless nights and hard times. It also finally helps to have people who know you well enough that they will speak the truth to you, especially as a leader. The higher you move up in the leadership ranks, people will stop telling you the truth because your authority gets in the way of that. And so, if you have someone who's willing to work on your team at multiple places as you move up through the ranks and who's moving up with you, if you have someone who will tell you the truth about your performance, about your attitude, about your energy levels, about how successful you are or are not in that new environment, that can also save everybody a ton of grief.
Yeah, just, such goodness. That you just dropped there again. Just good stuff. I'm learning a lot of the lessons that you're talking about. I am learning now. Mm-hmm. And like building the crew or building the team and having that crew that comes with you.
Yeah.
The small crew that I've got now are people who I would trust implicitly. No worries. But it took a while. I had to kiss a few frogs to get to this point.
Yeah. And it's also the case that that comes with responsibility. I remember one of my, you know, multiple company management team members, you know, saying to me when I reached out to him at a new company, saying to me, I didn't like the way that you left me at the last company. And I need a promise from you that you will not do that again. And that, you know, you will be more transparent with me as your, you know, feelings about the place are changing. And so, you know, they demand things from you, but also here's the thing. It helps you to refine your decision making and how you move about in a company more and more if you begin to have long-term relationships with your team, because you're not going to talk them into a situation that's unstable. You're not going to talk them into a situation where you can't conceive of how you would move forward. You're not going to talk them into anything, actually. It has to be something that, first of all, you believe can be successful, you've got some mission for, and second of all, you believe that they can make an independent contribution to. And so all of that is probably the most thoughtful part about kind of moving up through the management ranks is kind of figuring out the mix. I like to think of it like a recipe. And, you know, you can get that sort of basic recipe out of the Betty Crocker cookbook. But what makes it, you know, my mac and cheese is the Havarti cheese that I mix in. It's like having your own secret sauce that you add in at the end. And that tends to be the people who you are working with. And I should add, don't let that blind you to amazing new people in the mix as well, because, you know, whether you believe in God or the universe or karmically speaking, you know, hopefully you are making people successful and independent in your management trajectory. And therefore, you know, the funnel is being filled with more folks who are looking for that opportunity as well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Yeah. Good stuff. Well, I have a slightly personal question for you now.
Okay. It is finally my natural hair color. Thank you for asking. I'm not a blonde.
Okay. So you say in your bio you enjoy baking.
Mm-hmm.
Are you by chance a fan of the Great British Baking Show?
I'm a desperate fan of the Great British Baking Show. I love every one of the contestants like they were my kid or something. I just love that show, and especially because it's so real. These are not professional people. They're not actors. They're not the beautiful people, and they are just, I don't know, it's just heartfelt for me. Plus, you know, I love the recipes and all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we actually started somewhere midstream in the series, went all the way back, found episode one, season one, and we are caught up as of last night. So
That's awesome. We are
diehard in my house.
Diehard here in my house too. In fact, my husband and I hadn't had time until just this weekend to watch the last episode of season 2023. And, you know, I'll give it away. Maddie, what? I'm so happy.
That was a shocker. I was sure it was going to be Josh.
I was sure it was going to be Josh too, but Maddie had this, he was so humble, you know, and he was taking every lesson and trying so hard. I mean, Josh was quiet, but Matt was humble. And I think humility is a superpower.
Well, it is. And that's a nice tie back. I figured if you didn't make the tie back, I would, back to what we're actually talking about. But with that particular character, and if you're not a fan of the Great British Baking Show, please watch it. It's wonderful.
Yeah, but if you're not a fan, we don't want you listening to this podcast.
No. I want listeners.
I'm sorry, I take it back.
Anyway, the whole idea of this contestant Maddie, was that he just had the biggest smile and the best attitude. And, you know, every time he was interviewed away from the tent, kind of they're talking to him about, well, how'd it go? And he's like, you know what? I'm doing my best. I don't know. You know, like he wouldn't brag. And even though the interviewers gave him space to brag about himself if he wanted to, he would not. And he always had the biggest smile and just was willing to help other people. And I think that's a great management lesson, is that if you can put other people before yourself, that you're going to succeed, you're going to do well in a management role.
I think you're right. And I'll add that he kept referring to his fiancee, Lara, who's the person who put his name forward for the show and who was behind him 100%. So that lesson about your crew, you know, people who know you and have been with you and believe in you, they can amplify your career just by virtue of that belief. And it was clear that he would not have been there if she hadn't believed in him.
Nope, absolutely not. So it's all about the crew. And with that, Wendy, thank you so much for a delightful conversation. How can people find you?
Let's see. You can connect with me via LinkedIn. It's Wendy M. Pfeiffer. That's probably the easiest way. I blog there. And, certainly you can reach out to me via any of the companies that where I sit on boards as well. But LinkedIn is the best social networking.
Cool. Yeah. Most people say that. So that's easy. All right. Awesome. Well, thank you for listening. Please subscribe to the show and connect with me on LinkedIn. Pick up my new book, Lead Like a Pro, The Essential Guide for New Managers, available on Amazon. And we will catch you on the next one. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Management Development Unlocked. Want more? Get a ton of insider tips and tools at GerardTrainingSolutions.com.